This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Thanks so much for listening today. Actor Val Kilmer has a new credit to add to his IMDb page: cinematographer. Here's why. Kilmer was an early adopter of home movies when he was a kid, and he loved video cameras back in the 80s when they seemed really exotic. He filmed original plays and movies he made with his brothers. He recorded his life as a student at Juilliard, the youngest student ever accepted at the time. He documented behind the scenes of movies he was in, Top Gun, The Doors, and even has video exchanges of him and Marlon Brando on the set of the infamous The Island of Dr. Moreau. Much of this video Kilmer shot is incorporated in a new film, which is part documentary, part video memoir, called Val. The footage of the young, gorgeous, and creative Val Kilmer is extraordinary for its existence, but also because filmmakers Leo Scott and Ting Poo contrast it with Val Kilmer's life today. Still charming and a little mischievous, but illness has taken a toll on his body and stamina. Kilmer has recently been recovering from throat cancer, and the treatment left him unable to speak without using his finger to cover a hole left in his throat by a tracheostomy, making it difficult to communicate. Yet the 61-year-old actor and visual artist does let you know what he thinks about art, Hollywood, family, and what it means to live a life. Val premiered at this year's Cannes Film Festival and was in theaters on July 23rd. Filmmakers Leo Scott and Ting Poo join us on All of It. Leo, thanks for being with us.
Hi. Yeah, thanks for having me.
And Ting, welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks. Thanks for having us, Allison.
Of course. You know, most people have likely seen Val Kilmer or heard him voice act in film over the years. He's been in more than 50 films since his career began. You know, Leo, I was wondering in particular what experiences both of you had had with him and his work before you started working on this film, and then how did you get involved with Kilmer? Leo, why don't you go first?
Right. I was nearly a decade ago, I was editing a half-hour comedy made by the filmmaker Harmony Korine. It's called Lotus Community Workshop, and it was a comedy where Val played himself as a motivational speaker in some parallel universe. I was editing this thing for a few weeks, but I never got to meet Val, and it was such a bonkers, amazing performance that I never tired of this performance. I never got bored of it. The joke stayed funny 3 weeks after starting. That doesn't normally happen in editing. And I just wanted to tell him that, how great he was. Harmony then prompted me. I told Harmony, he sort of insisted, you've got to email him, tell him, he'll love it. So I kind of thought about it for a minute, probably a day actually, and then I sent him an email, and he replied within less than a minute, and had like a few email exchanges, and it went from that to sort of him taking over my entire life. I was kind of in the process of moving to America anyway, he asked me to help him on his Mark Twain project that he was doing. He'd been writing it for 10 years, and he'd started doing early workshops, and I started editing these Mark Twain plays together. He was the director, producer, writer, and obviously the star. It was for a movie. He was development. That play itself was a full development of a movie that he was trying to eventually make. I would cut these plays together, send them back to him, and he could then adjust his performance based on those films. Anyway, so I moved there to America and around that time, and then I started filming behind the scenes as well. Because it seemed like a very important moment, as you know, and it was, I was getting closer, spending more and more time with him. So we started making a film about acting at that time, and about creating a role all around the Twain character. But you know, a couple of years into working with him, he asked me to help him with this mountain of tapes that he'd had in storage. So you know, I had experience of working with video. I was, you know, assistant editor at the time, going from analog into digital, so I wasn't too fazed by it until I saw the quantity of footage. It was insane how much, you know, most people over exaggerate, but he sort of under exaggerated how much there was, and there was tons and tons of video. And I, over 9 months, I started sort of digitizing it, so to speak.
Yeah, we see video from when he's a child. We see video from when he's at Juilliard. We see video from behind the scenes. We see video of him now as he clearly wants to communicate and has a lot to say, but obviously has difficulty speaking. So, Ting, I'm curious, it's such an eerie moment at the beginning of the film when you hear a voice that sounds so much like a young Val Kilmer, and it becomes clear almost immediately that his son Jack is narrating the film because of his father's vocal impairment. Ting, when did it become to you all to have Jack narrate the film?
Well, pretty early on, actually. We knew that we wanted to tell the story from Val's perspective, but obviously we needed a voiceover help. And we'd been spending time with Jack. Lila had been filming him with Jack a little bit and had gotten to know him over the years. He cut a film that he was previously in. And so pretty early on, he was our first choice to ask if he would do the voice. But I think we were all sort of, I mean, we knew it would be wonderful, but we were all very, very taken aback by just how much he would sound like Val and how much he would actually, you know, that layer would bring to it.
Let's take a listen to a clip from the film Val that gives our audience a chance to understand the narration and its impact. This is from the film Val.
Now that it's more difficult to speak, I want to tell my story more than ever. A story about my life. That is also not my life.
If I have lived my life, then it's sort of all in these boxes. But what is part of the profound sadness is that I know it's incomplete as much as I've filmed and as hard as I've tried. There's nothing I can do to make any of it understood. That I know that that's not true, but it's how I feel.
Kilmer and his son, Jack. We're talking about the film Val. I'm speaking with directors Leo Scott and Ting Poo. So, Leo, one of the underlying themes in the film and from Kilmer's interviews is that he always considered himself an artist and very serious about his craft, about going to Juilliard and writing plays. It was his dream to play Hamlet. And he tries to create his own opportunities. He made personal audition tapes to send to Scorsese and Stanley Kubrick. But he ended up, you know, especially initially, being funneled into more commercial work. Leo, what happened that kept him in the Hollywood machine, and how did that internal struggle play out in his career?
Well, I mean, I feel like Val, the more I got to know, as I got to know him, I realized that he is a real artist. You know, the kind of films he was making as a kid and the art he was making with his brothers, he's a real artist, but, you know, he incredibly talented actor, and he was the first student accepted into Juilliard, age 17, and incredibly talented, and also incredibly handsome. So when it came to, you know, him sort of then becoming, you know, getting his first theatre roles, he was eventually pulled into the world of movies, and he, you know, Val as a person, he's a kind of almost perfect blend of sort of like, of art and commerce. You know, he can do it, and he's so fantastic. And I think he was pulled more and more into Hollywood, and eventually ended up as Batman, which is kind of the ultimate role. And I feel like, you know, he is someone who really enjoys both sides of you know, art and also commerce and pop. And I think he kind of completely understands it. And I think he sort of, it's quite interesting how he returned in later life back to the stage. And that's what gave him the most joy, going back to his Mark Twain character that he was developing for so long.
Let's, you know, the desire in him for more in terms of substantive acting roles in films, you know, it led to this reputation in Hollywood for being quote-unquote difficult to work with. And the film looks at both sides of it. Let's just listen to a clip from the film where this is being discussed. This is from the film Val.
I was about to start school in New York when I had a dream. In it, I was talking to my high school girlfriend, Mare, and her mom about death. Her mom said it wasn't something she feared because it was where she would meet her creator. I woke from that dream to a phone call from my older brother, Mark, telling me that Wesley had an epileptic fit and drowned in our jacuzzi. He was 15.
Sorry, that was the wrong clip. In that clip, actually, let's put that to side. I don't know if engineer can hear me. Could you please play clip C3? This is a clip about Val Kilmer's reputation in Hollywood from the film Val.
All these stories about how tough Val Kilmer, who pulled out of Batman, is to work with.
Spoiled and immature, a perfectionist obsessed with detail.
Stop it. Stop!
Let that man alone!
I'm guessing that probably not much of those things are true.
None that I heard of.
Yeah.
You're not difficult.
No, I care very much about telling the story well.
I'm frustrated because what I have to do isn't getting filmed because the director isn't able to bring it out.
Not very long ago, it mattered if you knew how to act.
Smile through it, Val. Smile through it, Val.
Now, it actually is a deterrent.
Yeah, if you know how to act, you could be a problem actor.
Is there a problem?
Yeah. It's a problem. You, because you're dangerous.
You are a perfectionist. You are an intense individual, would you not say?
Val is his own man, you understand?
The only thing that I've obligated myself to is to be the best actor that I can be. I didn't want to address also being a politician.
You know, Ting, as someone like someone when you look back in your life, how did Val feel about that period in his life when he started to get that reputation, given he was really just trying to do good work?
I mean, Val himself doesn't dwell in the past. Mm-hmm. He's a very present and forward-thinking person. So if anything, I think that sequence was something that we put in there on his behalf because it's just part of the narrative of his career. So I think if you would ask him, he's evolved past having any regrets about, you know, what conceptions of him may or may not have been. But for us, we just wanted to show that sometimes his drive and his honest determination and to bring the most he can to every role that he's in, you know, would sometimes find themselves in difficult situations. And I think we do show that in the film.
I'm curious, Leo, you know, Val is very much a part of the film. It's his footage. He creates, he paints the title cards for the sections. We see he's become a prolific artist. When your subject and his family are so heavily involved in making a film, what kind of boundaries did you set as filmmakers, Leo?
Well, we went to him, you know, I'd been working with him, as I said earlier, like for a long time. And, you know, having to like hold back on the Twain film we were making, it wasn't until like a few years later I went back to him. At this point, I've known him for a very long time and a lot of trust and a lot of love and, you know, friendship and outside of any kind of film or projects and stuff. So when Ting came to me and said, let's go back to that thing we were doing years ago, and we went at it fresh, but we went to Val with this idea. And it was, we're asking him to like make a story out of all this incredible footage. And there was so much trust involved in doing that. And, you know, we always wanted to do a very first person subjective type story, which would relied on him being part of that journey with us. So it was a kind of a thing that we went on together with Val, even before, you know, the whole thing was financed or anything. We started making this thing. And so it's all about sort of something. It was all about trust, really, and there was a lot of collaboration. But we needed to take him on the journey through his life, look at things from his past, which are sometimes emotional, sometimes forgotten, or sometimes funny moments. But we took him on that journey with us, and we went there together. And that was there's other films you could make which would have been sort of third person films with talking heads and people saying their recollections of working with Val, or this kind of thing. But we wanted to do this very subjective type approach. The footage was kind of asking for it, and Val's such a mercurial person. He's one of the few people who could probably sustain that sort of story over a kind of feature length.
Yeah, it reminded me quite a bit of a memoir, like a collage/memoir of his life. We only have about a minute left, Ting. The last part of the movie deals with his passion project, the Citizen Twain play that he wrote and starred in before he became ill. Why was this so important to him, Ting?
I think Twain was somebody that he's looked up to his whole life. I mean, he refers to him as like the first stand-up comedian, and in a lot of ways there's so many similarities between him and Twain. Val is an incredibly funny and hilarious person, and being in a room with him is like a joke a minute, and I think, as you can kind of see in the film, like there's crossover between their two lives. In terms of, family members that were lost and, things throughout their career.
And love of the word. We're about to run up on a hard out. I want to make sure people know the name of the film. Your editors and producers, you understand. The name of the film is Val. I've been speaking with directors and editors Leo Scott and Ting Poo. Thank you so much for sharing your process with us. We appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much.
And that is all of it for this hour.